Hello, everyone. I am doing an episode on Charles I today because I'm just a big old weirdo and I can't stop thinking about Charles I and his, like, Puritan situation and his weird thing with the Duke of Buckingham and everything that happened to him. This poor guy. Everyone gives all this attention to Louis XVI, who was beheaded in the French Revolution, but this guy was the first major monarch that I can think of in the medieval era that was executed, not just beaten in a war, but executed. This guy, this king, Charles I, was the king of England in the 1600s, and he had his head chopped off. So, but he had all these things about him that I find, I don't know, relatable and something, maybe not relatable, but he kind of kept to himself a lot, and he didn't follow the rules. He was a free-thinking princess. No, I'm just kidding. But he was a man of his word and literally kept to his word as long as he could. And I can't stop thinking about him. But I can't be the only one. Is there anybody else out there that just thinks about Charles I all the time? They're in the shower and they're, oh my God, that poor guy. Does anybody know if he was actually really poor, though? His dad was really, really poor, James I. It had super mega debt. But, okay, so this poor guy, Charles I, he wasn't even supposed to be king, first of all. His older brother was, and his dad basically ignored him all the time until his brother died. And then his dad was like, oh, yeah, by the way, did I ever tell you I love you? And here's a book I wrote, totally not for your older brother. It's for you. And it's the Basilicon Doron, and it's how to be a king, basically. So there is this guy, Buckingham. You probably heard of Buckingham before, maybe, if you're into medieval England, who was really, really close advisor to King James I, which is Charles's dad. And everybody has all these rumors about how close they were. I don't know. But the big thing is, when James I died, good old Buckingham was best friends with Charles I and was super, super close with him, to the point that he got all these special favors. He could convince the king to do and not do things. He could even convince the king to give titles and land and money and favors and all sorts of things to people that Buckingham liked. And so nobles were kind of like, excuse me? And Buckingham also got really involved in who Charles should marry. And he just really, there's always these kinds of guys throughout history where there's just someone really close to the king that has weird amount of powers that, you know what I mean? But I digress. But everybody knows that Charles had huge problems with Parliament, and it's basically what people remember him for the most, other than, you know, getting his head chopped off and the Civil War, you know, that came before getting his head chopped off. So jumping right into the big meat of all of this, Charles I, I don't know, he kind of had this, there's rumors, I don't know if this is true. Does anybody know if this is true? Where when he married his wife, Henrietta Maria, she was the sister of the King of France, and France was like super, super Catholic. And part of the agreement of the King of France allowing the King of England to marry his sister was like, you know, maybe go easy on the Catholics there and allow them to practice their religion. And you have to keep in mind that his wife, Henrietta Maria, which he did marry, obviously, she was a practicing Catholic. She wasn't just people having rumors that she was Catholic. She had this Catholic little area of the castle built for her in the Catholic style of worship. And she would go there every day, probably more than once. There's probably somebody out there that knows a little bit more about Henrietta Maria's religious practices than I do. But she would go out there and actually practice Catholicism. Mark that with the fact that she had a lot of influence over her husband. She could convince him to do things and not do things. All of the nobles in Parliament were like, oh my God, this Catholic is controlling our king. And she's going to convince him to allow Catholics back. Which doesn't sound like a big deal today, but back then, we're talking the mid-1600s. And by then, hundreds of years of warring and back and forth over the Catholics are in charge and now they're going to kill the Protestants. The Protestants are in charge and now they're going to kill the Catholics. And it's just, there's so much tension. about all of this, and this is not that long after the whole Reformation where people break away from the Catholic Church and they're like, Catholic Church is corrupt, we're going to start Protestantism. It's not that long after that. So it was a really big deal. And couple that with the fact that England had just been fighting a lot of wars with France, of course, but because of course, and Spain, and those are Catholic nations. And so Catholics were really seen as the enemy by Parliament and by Protestants. So that's kind of setting the stage. So moving back to Buckingham a little bit, these nobles already didn't like him. He was really close to Charles. And this guy, this guy, everything that this Buckingham guy is doing is just making it so much worse. Okay, so he had this great idea to be basically Sir Francis Drake II. He's, we're going to bring the rah-rah of England back, and the might of the English fleet is going to be such the world has not seen for ages. Anyway, so he convinces Charles to basically attack this city of Cadiz in Spain, basically just for the reason of bringing the might of England back. But there might be other reasons, too, that I'm not thinking of right now. But so Charles, this is a great idea. Let's totally do this. So Buckingham is like, cool, I'm game. I'm going on board. I'm going to set out there. Buckingham could convince the king to do all this crazy stuff, but he wasn't actually an officer in charge. And so he gets this other guy, Cecil, to be in charge of the fleet of English ships sailing to Spain to attack them. And this guy, Cecil, was this incredible soldier, but he basically had no sea experience as a sailor, but he's like commanding all of these English ships. This is already a disaster. It's hard to imagine why somebody can't predict that this is not going to go right. So it's basically a disaster. There's all this stuff happening with like the wind and ships getting overturned and ships getting blown over into the water and lost at sea. And then you have the supply issues, which kind of seems like you could plan that in advance a little better. But there wasn't enough food or clean water or wine or ale or anything to go around. And there's this story where basically they wanted to take this town nearby Cadiz. They're like, let's land here and we'll go to Cadiz from here. So they go there and Cecil is all, okay, everybody, we've discovered some wine in the port here or in one of the ships. And the guy in charge, Cecil's, okay, everyone, guess what? Announcement. We've discovered some wine in one of the Spanish ships. Now we won't be thirsty. Let's all drink a little bit. And so the soldiers drank, and they basically got super, super smashed. They got smashed so bad that they were basically too drunk to walk or operate a ship or do anything. And keep in mind, this is kind of on an empty stomach. I don't know if you've ever drank on an empty stomach. I haven't for a very long time, and it's making me so sick to think about it right now. So you have all these drunk sailors who were conscripted in the first place. They were forced into service in the first place, and they're basically not going to be able to take anything. So then the guy Cecil in charge is like, oh my God, these guys are so drunk, we can't do anything. Let's turn around and go home. So then, on the way back, the bubonic plague, the actual Black Death, breaks out on the ship. Everybody starts dying. This whole thing costs a ton of money. It was basically just a horrible booze cruise / carnival cruise. Maybe those are the same thing. But it was just kind of this horrible thing that cost a lot of money. And Buckingham was basically the guy that was trying to make it happen. And it was seen as a failure on his part for planning this debacle or not planning this debacle. I don't know. I personally think it's his fault because he was in charge. But I don't know, man. Something that bad, there's a lot of blame that probably can go around there. So anyways, people in Parliament were like, really? This guy just cost us a ton of money, forced all these people to go basically get on a booze cruise and then come back. What a failure. What a complete incompetent idiot. And he's leading our king around. But then it gets even weirder. There's another siege or expedition. That was the Cadiz expedition. There's another one for when France was fighting this kind of stronghold city called La Rochelle. And in La Rochelle, there was all these Protestants and they were resisting the government, the King of France, different policies and things like that, that they saw as not so great for themselves. Let's just leave it at that. And he and Buckingham was like, dude, my king, let's go help those people and I'll totally be in charge again. And the king's like, great idea, let's do it again. And then all these other countries got involved. The Dutch Republic was involved and Spain was involved and all these crazy triangles of alliances and whatnot. But okay, so now they have to force people to go join them again. And this wasn't that long. God, I want to say, when was La Rochelle was 1627. When was the Cadiz expedition? Oh my God, 1625. That's right. So this is 2 years-ish later. Buckingham is like, let's do it again. And the king's like, sure, let's do it. And so then they force massive amounts of people to join the expedition again. And there's this statistic that's 1 in every 10 of the people that were forced to join the Navy and fight, 1 of every 10 was either too ill or too old to really fight. They were just like throwing bodies on these ships. And so again, bad planning. I really just, the mind of the 17th century military officers and planners, I don't understand it. Is it the lead? There was a lot of lead in crystals and, you know, crystal glasses and things like that. What other explanation? Anyways, this is a really horribly planned expedition or whatever you want to call it, campaign. Really horribly planned campaign. And soon disease and starvation and all sorts of crazy things and like really bad hygiene that's making people sick and killing people. Also, it's not just regular old disease, it's bad hygiene disease that makes it spread faster. Killing everybody on the ships. Nobody wants to be there. This is going to be really stupid. And so they're heading towards France and they don't have enough food. Again, surprise, surprise. But get this. This is so crazy too. Lord Buckingham, the Duke of Buckingham, he's up in that ship having his food served on this platter. It's a literal silver platter that's worth many fortunes. It's worth like fortunes of fortunes of fortunes. And he's having on this ship where everyone's starving, his meals, which he's not starving probably. I know officers usually had a lot more food, and so he's probably not starving, and he's getting all this stuff delivered to him on a silver platter, literal silver platter, and he's got all these, like, jewels encrusted into his fancy coats, and just totally a different level than everybody on this ship. And they're looking at him like, really? But it's even weirder. It's even crazier. Again, the mind of the military planners of the age. Baffling. all of these people that are forced to be there, a tenth of which are too sick or too old to even do anything about. And that's when they were made to join. That's not even including however many got sick on the journey there. But you have all these people that are starving and don't want to be there, and they're not paying any of these guys. They're not paying them. What? So Buckingham obviously does not have money problems at this time. But, okay, so setting the stage a little bit, this is what we're talking about. So the whole thing's kind of a disaster. England ends up leaving. They try to send more ships later. Blah, blah, blah. Yada, yada. That's not important. The thing that's important is that the soldiers weren't paid and they keep being sent on these crazy, stupid, cockamamie schemes of Buckingham, convincing Charles to authorize this stuff. And they're failures. And everybody already super hates this guy. So fast forward, I want to say 3 months later, after this failure, the Protestants in that town of La Rochelle held out for a very long time against the French government. So this is not a diss on them. This is just talking about Buckingham being really dumb and everybody already super hating him. So fast forward 3 months later, Buckingham's in a tavern, in a nice little tavern. Do, 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 do. My wife is here. She's beautiful and pregnant. And what is that I hear? A commotion outside? Someone's calling me? I'll be right there. And so he runs downstairs and he's ambushed. He's basically ambushed and he's held down and he's stabbed to death. And his pregnant wife looks out the window. I think this happened like in the street right outside the tavern. She looks out the window and she can see her husband's bloody neck or bloody heart or whatever, just lying on a table, stabbed there while everybody flees. And so this is crazy. So it turns out the guy who stabbed him, out of everybody that hated Buckingham, the guy who stabbed him was a sailor that was unpaid in that La Rochelle expedition. Didn't see that coming very much, but okay. But so think about this. It was kind of this situation where so many people hated Buckingham that people started writing poems about it, songs about it. And I don't know really if there are that many people that supported it. That makes me wonder how popular these songs and poems really were, or if it was just like a few people. I don't know. I just wonder. But, okay, so the guy is put on trial and he's executed and all that stuff. But, okay, there's all this other stuff going on where his wife is best friends with this girl, Lucy, who's going around cheating on her husband all the time. And she's playing both sides, the parliament and the king. And she's this super gossip. And there's all this crazy drama going on with that. And then here's the other thing. He goes into Scotland and he's all, hey, guys, I know you practice this Presbyterian form of Christianity, but I think you have to do our English version of Christianity. And in fact, I'm going to give you a prayer book that says how you have to do it. Ta-da! Here's my prayer book. It's now your prayer book. And so there's like a riot and this lady was throwing chairs and this English priest trying to spread the prayer book, and people really hated it. And all the people in charge in Scotland got together and they all pledged this super duper oath to never let England change their religion, and they're going to uphold their Presbyterian way of life. So now Scotland, already not so much liking England, now is like, you England and you Charles the First. Now they're super duper rallied against him. And I feel so bad for Charles, because everything, reading about his life before he became king and just his private life while he was king, he seems like such this sweet, innocent guy who was just trying to keep his word, not let himself be too swayed. I mean, everybody gets swayed. Parliament members get swayed. Kings get swayed. So it's not too crazy that Buckingham could sway him. But it seems like he just was trying to do the right thing and trying to have the sense of integrity. I could be totally wrong. That's my impression of him. And he just seems, oh my God, it's just really sad. And then Civil War ended up breaking out and he ended up being beheaded, captured by Parliament's forces and had his head gone. So, and this was like, what, 150 years or so before Louis XVI was beheaded in the French Revolution. So I think he deserves a little bit more recognition, maybe. And maybe in England, I don't know. Anybody in England watching this, let me know. You probably are like, yeah, in England, he does get a lot of recognition. But in the U.S., we don't. I bet that most, like the average person will know that Louis XVI was beheaded, but not Charles I. They won't know about that, which is weird because when you think about one of our most important colonies, Virginia, we had our governor, Governor Berkeley, and I do some episodes, some narrative episodes on this podcast about this, but he fought beside the king in the Civil War. He left his post as governor of Virginia to go to England to fight beside the king because he grew up around the king in the king's palace as like basically a male lady in waiting to the king. So, and it was this super important thing. And then Virginia had this armed militia on the banks of the river standoff with Parliament's forces trying to impose their authority once they beheaded Charles. And they're like, we're not going to bend to a tyrannical Parliament that overthrew the king. You guys are illegitimate. And there's like a big deal. So maybe even in Virginia, people might know about it more than elsewhere. I don't know. I'd be very curious about that. There's so much more about Charles I that I can just go on forever, but that's, I just had to get that out. This poor freaking Charles I. Quote me on that. Poor freaking Charles I. Okay. I don't know. Let me know what you think. All right. Until the next episode, I will hopefully see everyone again. And remember to subscribe and like and all that stuff. Okay. Bye.